The sponsor of this week's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast is Incremental. Is your iOS performance looking stranger and stranger? Do your decisions seem all wrong? Is your Facebook CPI above $50? If you know what I'm talking about, that's because the measurement paradigm has changed, but your tech stack hasn't. Incremental is the first and only always-on incrementality measurement that doesn't rely on user-level data or complex experiments, allowing you to get true value measurement for all of your channels, campaigns, and ad groups, whether you are on iOS, Android, influencers, TV, or even billboards. The platform is already used by some of the largest and most sophisticated advertisers in the mobile space. Join the future of marketing measurement today with Incremental. Google Incremental, the future of measurement, or use the link in this episode's description to learn more.
The problem is that the distinction needs to be drawn between the competence of the economists and the correctness of their analysis.
Welcome to the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast. This is your host, Eric Sufert. My guests today are Dieter Rappold and Felix Kraus, the founders of Context SDK, a tool that allows app developers to optimize and personalize their products using on-device contextual signals. Dieter is a serial entrepreneur and investor, and he leads business operations at Context SDK. And Felix is a well-known security researcher who previously founded Fastlane, which was acquired by Twitter and rolled into the Fabric app development platform, which was then acquired from Twitter by Google. The topic of my discussion with Dieter and Felix is on-device processing. In our conversation, we cover what on-device processing is and why it is more privacy secure than other methods of personalization, how personalization should fit into the product development workflow, what sorts of contextual signals are available to be used in personalizing an in-app user experience, where developers can achieve success in personalization, and how deeply personalization using on-device contextual signals must be integrated into the product to materially impact its commercial performance. Please enjoy this conversation with Dieter Rappold and Felix Kraus. I have Dieter and Felix with me today on the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Thank you very much, Eric, for having us. Doing great here in Vienna, Austria.
Felix, are you doing great as well?
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having us today. Excited to be on this podcast with you.
Cool. So I'm excited to have you on the podcast because on-device processing has been something that I've felt will be very transformative for the mobile app ecosystem going forward, particularly in the sort of reconstruction phase that the app economy is going through post-ATT. Full disclosure, I invested in your company, but the reason for that investment, the motivation for that investment was this kind of thesis that, these on-device signals are, privacy safe. They're a way to sort of bring insight to app developers and to enrich the app experience without having to sort of trade data around outside of the first-party context. And so this has been like a keen interest of mine for a while. That motivated the investment, but it also motivates this podcast today. So before we get into all of that, why don't you both introduce yourselves to the audience in your own words?
Very happy to do so, and I will start. So my name is Dieter. I have a background in business administration. I'm a serial entrepreneur in the field of digital marketing and tech since 2001. Built a handful of organizations, some of them up to the size of 180 employees. And I'm focusing on the venture capital startup ecosystem since 7 years now. And I know Felix for a long time. We reconnected last spring and I joined Felix as a co-founder last summer. And in my role as CEO at Context SDK, I'm focusing on fundraising, on go-to-market business development, and building a meaningful organization around the product and engineering talent of Felix. Over to you, Felix.
Hey, I'm Felix. So I've worked on developer tools most of my life, the biggest one being Fastlane, which is a tool for iOS app developers to automate their development and deployment processes. So I've always been passionate about building something that I can use myself and that I can benefit from myself. And so with my most recent role after Fastlane, I also got into touch with data science, statistics, and so on. And so with Context SDK, we can now merge these two areas of my life together, which is the data science aspect and the developer tools aspect of mobile developer tools. And this is where we are now.
And out of curiosity, how did you both meet? I guess it's just, is it just because the Austrian tech ecosystem is quite small and everyone knows everybody, or was it through some sort of project?
it could be said in such a way because, you know, Austria is not that large. But in our case, I think the story how we met is truly a very nice one, because it's about 14 years ago when a very young, very bright guy showed up at my first company and started his first summer internship. So this is how I met Felix. He did his first summer internship at my organization. And even at the age of 15, it was very clear that this is an amazing guy. And so that's how we became friends. I followed his career path and was super happy and thankful to kind of reunite after that long time this spring.
Oh, wow. That's a very fascinating story. That's quite the personal friendship and professional career arc. Okay. So I'll start the podcast off with just like a sort of very high level, big concept question, which is, what is on-device processing?
Yeah, so the way we see it is kind of like edge computing, as in it runs on your device in your hands as you use your phone, as you use your app. And so that is especially made possible now with, you know, the rise of the capabilities and performance of smartphones, right? Like a few, many years ago, running machine learning models on device or even doing some training on device like was not possible. Nowadays, they have their own dedicated chip, right, to run those machine learning models like super efficiently without using any battery almost. On top of that, with on-device processing, what companies are able to do is, you know, work around or work with those new privacy regulations and new privacy awareness that has come over the last few years. And that's kind of like what we were spending a lot of our time on. So overall, I would say when we talk about on-device processing, it's making the decision on if and what the app should do or show on-device without having to ask like any backend or server or centralized infrastructure. This allows you, you know, to make instantaneously make decision, make them way more efficiently and way faster.
Right. Can we just hover there for a second? Because I think that's like the critical concept. And I want to make sure that, you know, everyone sort of understands it. So talk to me about the sort of workflow of like, let's say that I'm in an app, right? And the app in that moment would like to make some decision about the content that it should show to me next. Like, talk to me about the workflow if you're not using on-device processing. So like, what parties are involved in that decision making if you're not wholly, you know, like sort of like wholly scoping that decision to the device?
Yeah. So it obviously highly depends on what kind of content management system or engagement platform each app uses. But generally, almost always, right, like you have the client, the app has to ask some kind of server like, hey, what should I show now? Like even just launching an app that seems simple, like, for example, the Uber app, right, it will look very differently depending on which country or which city you'll launch it in. And so it's always the back and always the servers that would respond back with like, hey, this is the variant you're running right now, or this is the information that you are showing right now, without really considering what the client's context is. But for example, with the example of Uber, like they would already consider the context of which city or which country you're in. So with on-device processing, you would put another layer on top, which would happen right before you would actually show something. So in a simple example would be, and this is one of the use cases we've been working on, is just improving conversion rates, increasing upsells of services. Like those are usually, like showing prompts is usually a very simple task. They just ask the user, like, do you want to upgrade right now or not? And what we do is we have this layer at the very last second, right before you would show the prompt, and you would ask Context SDK like, hey, should we actually show this or not? So this is what we would understand is on-device processing.
Thank you. And now, like, I think that's helpful context to segue into kind of the next, you know, sort of pertinent question that I think is fairly obvious. It's like, why is on-device processing more privacy secure than transmitting data off the device to potentially your own server, but also maybe some other server, some other service? Like, why is that more privacy secure to keep it all in device?
Yeah, and as you said, like it's actually very common, right, to distribute your data to multiple services. Like those engagement platforms are huge. Like they collect all kinds of data, and you would actually only need a small subset. Like this is usually not necessary to do all of this. So why is it more secure than other methods? Well, the primary reason is just that the data doesn't have to leave the device, right? So when the decision is made locally with on-device machine learning models, like, again, we don't need to send the data back home. There is no transmission of data and so on. Usually what would still happen is you would still send some kind of data, especially performance data, on like, hey, how is the model performing? Like, you still want to send that back home, but you don't have to send or operate with any PII. You never have to identify, you know, the user, the device, or anything like this, which again, it makes it more secure, but also makes it way easier around all these new privacy regulations that are coming in all these different countries.
Right. And just to be clear, like what you'd be sending off, what would go off the device would be like aggregated performance data. It wouldn't be related to any specific user, right? And it certainly wouldn't be identifiable by any given user.
Yeah. So there are multiple ways. One is just aggregation. One approach we do is because we learned how different every single app is and which factor plays into conversion and which doesn't. We also log data that would help us calibrate our models. The key point here is that we never identify a specific user or device, but instead we would say like, hey, this was the current context around, you know, this is the time of the day, this is the battery level, this is the kind of like motion data, and this was the outcome. Like, was the conversion successful or not? Like something very abstract that would never, ever allow us to pinpoint a specific user or a specific device. So we get all the benefits of being able to train real, like high-end machine learning models without falling into those privacy regulations, because those privacy regulations are almost always focused on the user or the device, like anything around fingerprinting or, you know, pinpointing it to a specific human.
Just kind of circle back a little bit to your kind of opening remarks. How important was it for devices to reach the sort of hardware capabilities of doing this in order for this to be feasible, right? So like give me a timeline. So like, could Context XDK have existed 5 years ago or no? Like the iPhone, the Androids, like weren't up to snuff. And also, does this kind of limit the sort of like universe of hardware that this type of approach could be applied to? Like, so low end Samsungs, you probably can't do it, or is kind of like, is the entirety of the smartphone ecosystem sort of like good enough or like, you know, advanced enough for, you know, most types of kind of on-device processing, maybe not all, but most types? Like how big of a role did like the acceleration of, or the improvement of the hardware play in this type of approach becoming feasible?
Yeah, I think the 5 years you mentioned is pretty reasonable. So for us, like Context SDK specifically, we do machine learning model execution on device, which runs instantly nowadays. We do training on our infrastructure. When it comes to actually training on device, that would require, you know, stronger end devices. So that would have only worked within the last few years, I would say.
But also the training, then you're talking about more of like a federated learning approach, right? Because you have to aggregate all the data from all the devices and train it in that way, right? So like when you're training your models, you're taking the data from the user and their device as just like one sample, essentially pushing it off, you know, aggregating it, pushing it off to the server. The server collects all the data from all the devices, uses that to train the model, and then pushes the new coefficients back to the devices, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's our current approach. And that would have worked, I would say, for the last 5 years. The biggest change, I think, from both Android and iOS was the native support for running machine learning models. Like that changed the game. Because before that, you would have needed to include some kind of machine learning execution software, like be it from Google or some other vendor, which would dramatically increase the size of your SDK and making it less, you know, useful for some potential clients. While nowadays, you know, our SDK, for example, uses less than a megabyte. So it's like there's almost no difference in download size and all these things.
Yeah. And the execution framework, you're talking about like PyTorch or a TensorFlow or something, right?
Yeah.
And Android and iOS both have dedicated runtimes for executing machine learning models. And they're segmented, right? They're segmented from the rest of the device, right? So there's another layer of privacy there, right?
Exactly. And then it runs on its own processor on the newer models and make sure, you know, to not block like the rest of the user interface and those kind of things.
Maybe to add to that, because this is the very interesting technical perspective of it, but from a more organizational perspective, it's also like there's some pieces of puzzle that fall together or seem like to fall together at the same time, not just the capabilities of the devices, but also at the same time, this rising privacy concerns and privacy regulations in the market. At the same time, clear decisions from ecosystems in the market to kind of close the walls and build more of a walled garden approach, kind of this change from third-party data to first-party data. So there's many different things that fall together and seem to be kind of a perfect opportunity of building something that you couldn't have built or wouldn't have been of the same relevance 3 or 5 years from now.
Yeah, and I think so. That's super important, right? Because just to contextualize this with, you know, the investment that I made in Context SDK, which is very important to me personally, but I also think helps to explain like why these types of changes happen, right? If it was just the improvement of the hardware, that may not have been enough of a catalyst to inspire people to pursue this kind of effort, right? Because it's a big sort of technological transformation that a lot of companies have to make, right? It's like, okay, well, it's one more tool I have to use. All right, you know, I've spent years and years and years building my product around this type of workflow. I've built out this entire backend infrastructure, and that's an investment that I've made, and it would cost me money to sort of shift everything away from that, right? The other impetus to this has to be the policy vector, right? Which is, well, no, you just can't operate that way anymore anyway, right? Like, we're not going to allow this. And so I think you need the confluence of both of those things. Like, obviously, if it was just the policy vector and the hardware wasn't capable of it, well, that'd be very problematic. But on the flip side, like, if it was just the hardware becoming capable of this, people probably wouldn't make the business decision to like transition away from the status quo because it's costly and it's just, you know, it's disruptive. But so I think it's a very good point. Okay, so I think going back, the next logical question to ask, right? Because we talked about the data staying on device, Context SDK in this particular case, but you know, any sort of like on device processing tool is making these decisions. So talk to me about how the model lives on the device. And we talked a little bit about the workflow there, but maybe we could go a little bit, you know, in more detail about how the model exists on the device and how it gets smarter over time. Because I think that's like obviously a critical part of this functionality.
And I'm very excited to talk about this. So we built a really cool system around this. We wanted to, you know, as we do on-device processing, we wanted to also be offline first. As in, you know, if you have an app and you launch it for the first time, like Context SDK should be able to run immediately, which is not something a lot of SDKs or apps can do, right? So what we've built is we actually provide a custom SDK binary for each of our customers. So that comes with the pre-trained model for that specific use case. And we actually haven't mentioned it now during this podcast. Before you start using Context SDK to make decisions, you would run it through, we call it a calibration mode. So you would set it up in like a read-only mode where you would still do whatever you're doing, like showing upsell prompt, showing the ATT prompt, and so on. And we would just listen to, okay, which context converted, which one didn't. And based on that, we would train that model. So now back to how we distribute the SDKs. We bundle that core ML file into our SDK binary so that it works out of the box. But that's only the first step, right? You want continuous improvement of the machine learning models. So what we do is we would constantly get new data and then retrain our machine learning models. And so we build an over-the-air deployment of new models. So we constantly ship out new challenger models. And that's something we're going to roll out over the next few weeks. Right now, it goes through binary distribution. But over the next few weeks and months, it's going to be challenger models that we deploy to a small subset of users. And if it's performing well, as with A/B test, right, you increase the adoption and compare the performance with existing models. So this would allow us to iterate very quickly. It doesn't rely on our customers to manually update SDKs or do anything else. And we would constantly optimize for the desired outcomes.
So you guys basically started this company fairly recently. I mean, you developed this kind of entirely yourself, right, Felix? So what is your background? I mean, just to explain, like, because I think what I want to get at is, what does it take to build something like this? Because there's obviously like the development component, the software engineering component, but you're also like doing machine learning. I mean, this is also like a machine learning exercise. I just wonder, like, what is the sort of combined skill set that is required to like, that was required to build this?
Yeah, as you pointed out, there's a lot of hats you have to wear. And yeah, it's right that I built the very first version myself, but nowadays I couldn't do everything myself. So we have a machine learning expert and we have an infrastructure expert to help with that. Because just collecting the signals and calibrating our, like, that we use to store, to calibrate and train our models, like just the infrastructure there is already like a lot. Like that's many tens of millions events a day we need to process and store in, you know, a meaningful way. Same for our machine learning models. My background on its own is mostly on the developer tools aspect. So it was enough to build the MVP where we were able to prove that, hey, context matters, like this approach works. Now it's just about building, you know, a company around it and building automation around it to actually do these deployments at scale.
Okay, so just to kind of broaden out like the idea of like, what are the inputs of this, right? So you kind of went through like, okay, well, this is the, these are the mechanics of how this works and how this delivers these sort of signaled, or this delivers the decision, right? But what are the inputs into the machinery to get to the decision? So like what sorts of contextual signals are available to be used in personalizing a user experience? And do they differ across iOS and Android?
Yeah, so initially it started out with just motion data. So how is your phone moving? How is your phone, in which position is your phone? And we're not talking about GPS, it's just the local movement of your phone. And so this allows us to, you know, give some estimates on, are you currently laying in bed? Are you currently sitting on a couch? Are you in a car? Are you walking? Those kind of things. That's how we started out. Obviously, now we take into account more signals, and it's simple things as, you know, the battery level, the day of the week, the time of the day, or, you know, what kind of region you have set for your phone. Those are kind of like our signals, and that's our secret sauce, also mostly around the motion data. We spend a lot of time analyzing motion data of different activities and pre-trained models also for the activity detection itself. And to your question around iOS and Android, those are very, very similar, but we do plan on training different models for both platforms. Android has not launched yet, but that was mostly because we haven't had a customer who was eager enough to say like, hey, we need this now. They are usually okay with, hey, let's use this on iOS, get the most out of that. And then realistically, we plan on launching Android in Q2.
Right, because I mean, iOS is the bulk of most app developers' monetization. So, I mean, it makes sense to start there. Actually, could you tell the story of how you came up with this idea? Because I thought that was really interesting when you relayed that story to me.
Yeah, many years ago when I was visiting my parents' house and drove in my car, and I was using this music application, not going to say any names now, and just wanted to play my main playlist. And I couldn't press play because there was a pop-up. And back then there was no CarPlay, right? So the phone didn't know it was in a car. And I had to pull over because I wanted to read that prompt. And it was just saying something like, hey, welcome to this new version, like this update, see what's new in this release. And I was actually interested in reading it, but obviously not in that moment. I wanted to drive home. So I figured like, this is so dumb. Like this phone should know, like I'm obviously in a very fast paced moving environment right now. Now is not the right moment. Ever since then, I thought like, hey, this is something we need to solve.
Right. And I think it just even that motion use case, I think is probably presents a significant opportunity to optimize the app experience, right? So if you think about just a couple of different cases of someone moving, right? One is like, they're not moving at all. Well, okay, then that's probably a good opportunity to show them something that requires their, you know, response, right? If they're moving at a walking or running speed, it's probably not the right time to do that because like they're engaged in some other activity that probably requires all of their attention. If they're moving at like a bus speed or a train speed, it probably is a good time to show them something that requires their response because, well, what else do they have to do unless they don't have internet, right? Which could be another signal, obviously. And then if they're moving at like a car speed, well, they might be driving and that's also like a very bad time, or they're probably not going to be fully engaged in a phone because, you know, you might get car sick if you're driving and, you know, even if you're in the passenger seat. So I think just that use case, it presents like a pretty significant opportunity to just improve conversion. And the conversion across any number of different placements or whatever. It could be an ad click or something, or it could be like opting into something, opting into the ATT prompt, or it could be clicking through to some sort of welcome pop-up that, you know, you need to do in order to actually use the core product. But I think that's a useful way to frame the next question, which is how should personalization fit into the product development workflow? So like, how should PMs think about this? Because I think it's become much more critical to do it. And I do view it as something of like a new skill set that PMs are maybe a little bit reluctant to adopt, because I know PMs often are very cautious about introducing automated systems that dictate what the user sees. I think they like to kind of, they see that as their craft. They see the curation of content that is exposed to the user as their craft, and they might be just protective of that. So how do you see personalization becoming a part of like the PM's toolkit?
I totally agree. Or I'd say this is exactly how we see it. The product owner knows the app and the audience best. And we're building on that. So since ever, apps, you know, try to create very personalized app experience to do their job in the best possible way to create a beautiful customer experience. And there's, you know, two factors that we have to look at. First, the core idea of building context to do the right thing. We always have done that with mobile apps. but we always have done that based on in-app usage and behavior. So what did I click on? What did I use? Where did I spend my time? Where did I abandon, et cetera, et cetera. So we're gathering all that in-app usage data and try to understand this specific user, the specific context, and then cater user experience and prompts and flows to that. Point taken, very valuable, very important. And the second one is how we look at personas as the users of our app. And there are very established ways, such as, you know, social demographic approaches or lifestyle approaches, and so on and so forth. But we believe there is a huge blind spot if we look at the market. And this blind spot is, from the persona perspective, within one user session, you are not a static persona, but you are more like a dynamic persona because it is mobile and we are moving. So within one user session, you may be standing up, walking, then sitting, and within that user session, you're in a lean back mode and then in a lean forward mode or whatsoever. So it can be very different across this one user session. And we have to take that into account. And we believe that this is kind of an additional data vector on how to look at the user and the respective persona to make decisions around that, which leads us to the second part, which is the real world context, which is up to now a blind spot. So we are trying to make the best possible decisions without knowing the real world context of the user. And what we are saying is not get rid of all the aspects that you have, but we are saying take all the aspects that you have, and on top of that, add the real-world context of the user to make your decision even better. As Felix said in the beginning, we see Context SDK as kind of a decision maker of last resort. So you have all your tools, tech stack, processes, and decision-making in place because you know your app, you know your audience, and you know what you would show next. But before you show it, you're asking, is it now a good moment or a bad moment? And this question, is it now a good moment or a bad moment, comes back to the core and root hypothesis or question that we are asking ourselves, which is, it is crucial to get the timing right. And how do we get the timing right? Because timing is everything. We believe only if we know the real world context of the user. So you have to add that specific aspect to the decision-making process. Because compared to, let's say, search processes, within using the mobile app, we don't know a lot or anything about the intent of a user. But the real-world context can be a great proxy for the intent. So this kind of idea or proxy for an intent does also help a lot to kind of create a more beautiful experience with the app, because you can lower the prompt intensity. So you don't have to shoot that often in hope for being right, but you only shoot when the timing is right, which creates a less annoying app experience, which has great impact on Net Promoter Score and on a better retention and better lifetime value.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So it's part of this is just, you know, shifting away from, we have no idea what this person is doing in any moment in time. And so we're just going to hit them with this monetization prompt or this engagement prompt many times. And maybe we'll catch them at the right time as a result of sort of exposing this to them many times. It's really just saying, okay, well, like, let's just inform the decision more. So we only have to do it once.
Exactly.
The sponsor of this week's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo podcast is Clarisites. Tired of waiting for updates to slow dashboards that don't tell you the complete story? Tired of manually aggregating data on spreadsheets to understand your campaign performance? What if you could access all the data you need in one place, without dependencies on SQL, spreadsheets, or valuable data team resourcing? That's why performance marketers at Uber, HelloFresh, Delivery Hero, and many others trust Clarisites to run marketing reporting, automating all manual work and helping them focus on insights that drive performance. What used to take weeks now takes minutes with Clarisites. Go to clarisites.com/demo to try it out for free. You'll see why thousands of performance marketers trust Clarisites every day. How do the various contextual signals map to different types of behaviors, right? So are there some signals that are better inputs for a user's openness to monetization versus engagement, or are they all like, can you not sort of isolate them in that way?
You know, from a product owner perspective, that's a very natural thing to ask, because, you know, you want to isolate one factor as kind of the denominator or reason for cause and effect. But as we said, currently we're picking up on 170 signals, and through cross-referencing and statistical analysis and machine learning executed on device, we come to a conclusion, to a decision. So the most important learning here is it's more complex than we think. And you cannot narrow it down, but it's kind of nested in this very complex thing. And I think that in a beautiful way tells the truth about the behavior of a user in an app at a certain point in the customer journey is not that simple that you can narrow it down to one unilateral A/B test. And that is exactly the situation where you want to apply machine learning, not because you want to give up your kind of competence of decision making, but you want to learn from the data and make better decisions based on that aggregated data.
Fair point, point taken. But have there been any signals or any baskets of signals that have surprised you as being predictive of some type of willingness to monetize or engage?
I can give you one anecdote, which was kind of very interesting to us, and I think gives some color to that story, which is in one case of our customers, we learned that even when the battery level of the user was below 5%, it did not negatively impact in a purchase prompt. And it was a social network / dating app for Gen Z. And it is a very specific case, and it could be totally wrong for a different app in a different case. So it shows how, you know, specific it is in terms of type of app, audience, and a certain prompt.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's playing with fire there. They're getting below 10%. I guess it's just it's so critical to make that next swipe, right?
Exactly.
All right. Where have you seen developers achieve success in personalization? So is it mostly on you've talked about a number of different use cases for this, but is it mostly monetization, mostly engagement, mostly like kind of the ATT prompt? Like where have you seen the most success, or what are some examples of success that you've seen?
So we are meanwhile at around 12 use cases, how you could use Context SDK and in the future, we see kind of an app running with theoretically an infinite number of custom models on every prompt and every flow to improve decision-making with the use of real-world context information. But the very natural first use case that most of our customers embark on and try is the premium upselling subscription prompt or in a purchasing prompts. So because, you know, with these ones, you very quickly see an impact in hard numbers, which gives you the confidence and trust to roll it out on others. And here we can see, to share some of these numbers, in the conversion to premium, an uptick of 10% and more. In LTV, an uptick of 20%, which was at first interesting to us, but then we kind of got this correlation of creating a less annoying app experience with the reduction of prompt intensity, which is kind of the contribution to the rise in LTV, and plus 30% for in-app purchases in some of the cases that we are tracking.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, you can understand the motivation for applying this to monetization initially, because that's going to have the biggest sort of commercial impact. But I think the sort of prompt intensity aspect of this is really interesting, because if you churn these users out with bombarding them with prompts, you'll never really know whether they would have monetized, right? And so that's not direct. That's obviously not a first order monetization tactic, right? But it nonetheless could materially impact monetization. Like if you've just irritated a person by, you know, exposing them to some high number of requests to convert and they churn, you have no idea whether they would have retained long term. And that's probably not indicative of their core interest in the app either. Like it's just they could have been a very retentive, a very sort of like high engaged user. It's just you've done something to annoy them. And so like you're not applying this necessarily in that sense to monetization, but nonetheless, it will improve monetization if you could just retain them by not annoying them with this endless stream of upsell prompts. Okay. So is building decision models based on device contextual signal something that most app developers are capable of doing themselves? And that's the, you know, kind of what I was hinting at when I was asking Felix for his background, but is this something that developers should pursue themselves? And obviously like you both run a service to do this, but I expect that, you know, you seem like pretty honest, transparent people. But is this something that like a team, especially like, you know, thinking about the different scale of the company, right? Obviously at Uber is a different, you know, profile of a company than like a 3-person app startup. But is this something that most developers are equipped to do themselves?
Yeah, I was about to give you the example of let's stay with Uber. Like they've been researching that space for a while. And as you mentioned, like they are at a size that they can afford that and probably should afford that. So for example, Uber, they did one thing that was in the news, in the mainstream news, which was about charging more money if your battery is running low, right? Like you really need to get back home so you don't care about search pricing. They had this other thing that I experienced, which is when I was living in New York, when you ordered an Uber from like an area that was known for like bars and restaurants and those kind of things, and it's Friday or Saturday night, they would highlight the Uber Black option more than usually. Like they clearly distinguish between, you know, an evening ride home versus, you know, a morning commute to the office or to the airport.
Do you think the core logic of that was that if someone's out in a bar area on Friday night, their judgment's impaired and they're probably willing to splurge on the Black more willingly than they would have been, you know, if it's a, you know, midday and they're totally clear headed?
So maybe the judgment is impaired, which could be one option. The other one would be just you're trying to impress someone. So you never know. But there's obviously some logic there. And there's definitely something there. And Uber has been doing that for a while. They also got caught apparently experimenting with detecting if you are drunk. So they would try, I don't know what kind of inputs they were trying to do. So those are the things that are maybe not too great of the examples of what you can do with those things. But back to the topic, which is, you know, large companies obviously care about those things and are trying to use that information to optimize their app. But to your question on if you can build this yourself, like I can say that, you know, we've been working on this for 1.5 years and we are multiple full-time people and, you know, we're still learning new things every single day. So it's definitely not feasible unless it's something simple like, you know, don't show a prompt if the battery level is low. Like you could obviously build that very easily. But at the same time, even that is not enough. Like as Dieter mentioned before, like turns out that's not even applicable to all the apps. So that's one thing. It's just like, it's a lot of work and a lot of different areas from mobile SDK to data collection to machine learning. But lastly is the whole story on data play. And that's something we are gonna get to. We're not at that stage yet. But obviously, as we learn new things on different verticals, different types of apps, we can actually use that information to provide you with an even better performance from day one. And like app tracking transparency would be one example. Like based on our current data set and experience, there's going to be a lot of overlap between different apps. So when somebody wants to onboard Context SDK specifically for ATT, for app tracking transparency, we'll be able to provide you a model way, way quickly, or even on day zero. So you can get started right away.
Right. And continuing along on that thread, like how deep do these integrations need to be to provide real value, right? So obviously like, you know, ATT prompt, that's just deciding when to show the prompt. That feels like a fairly straightforward thing to do. But, you know, if you're talking about unlocking, you know, 2x or 3x terminal LTV from this kind of decision-making, does the personalization need to be integrated in like, okay, well, how many gems do we give you as a reward for completing this level? Or what is the actual ordering of the levels? Or what is the sort of, you know, to the Uber example, like, you know, do we know that the area of town you're in has a high density of bars? I mean, those require like a lot more sort of knowledge of the context than just like, okay, what's the right moment to show this or that prompt? Like, is it a spectrum? Is like, well, you can unlock value across, I mean, it sounds like it is. You can unlock value across all of these opportunities, but in order to get like, yeah, 3x or 4x or to, you know, sort of like materially change the sort of prospect of that user opportunity, do you need to really deeply integrate it into the product, like life cycle and the product experience?
The way how we are trying to build it, or let's say the way how we're building it, is we want to make it as easy as possible for any iOS developer out there to onboard and integrate the product into their app. And I think it's basically the track record and history of Felix with Fastlane that gives confidence that this is possible, or that we have the right setup to do that. Because we are very aware that in app companies, iOS development resources are very scarce. So part of our value proposition is that, you know, basically this should be done with 5 lines of code and within 2 hours, so to say. So because we are working with the permissions you have, you know, and basically we're taking the data that is there and working with that, no matter if it is to optimize your premium upsetting prompt or the app rating prompt or the ATT opt-in prompt or whatsoever. If in the future, for example, one aspect that we're working now is dynamic product experience. So not just a simple, is it a good moment or a bad moment decision, but rather I would show option A, B, or C. So, you know, there is eventually a future which is more complex, which would require eventually in the future a deeper or more complex integration. We will find out. And if you go long-term and on a visionary level, my personal take on that is if we look at mobile app development, I think this is also somehow ripe for change. And one way how this could change is imagine if the future would be different. So mobile app development would not be the most expensive web development because of scarce resources. And imagine if we would think mobile apps in the future not, you know, hierarchical and as kind of static decision trees, but rather flat with entry points and endpoints. And the rest is facilitated with AI based on decision-making, factoring in real-world context information, and then building developer tools so that everybody can build mobile apps in such a way powered by such an engine. Then this could completely change the way how mobile apps are built and work.
Do you find that that idea scares product managers? Because I could see that being like a little bit intimidating. It's like, hey, this tool, this approach, like just sort of, you know, radical personalization is going to take your job.
I think we could ask that question for every, let's say, profound innovation in tech out there, whether it is generative AI or whatsoever. And no, it's not going to take your job if you're curious to find out how it is going to make the life of users better by building better apps.
Fair enough. That's a great answer. Very diplomatic. Dieter, Felix, this is a fascinating interview. I think this is a topic that's only going to become more critical for app developers and I think any kind of consumer tech, you know, developer over time. I'm happy to have your steady hands working on solutions to this problem. Before we leave, how can people find you? How can they interact with you online? How can they learn more about Context SDK?
So contextsdk.com, and you'll find resources there. You can find Felix and me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Connect with us. We're very happy to jump on a call anytime and together with you dive deep into the topic and find excited partners for this journey of the future of mobile apps.
Great. Thank you both so much. And I look forward to seeing what you accomplish.
Thank you very much, Eric. Thanks again for having us. It was great doing this interview and also curious about what's waiting ahead for us.
Take care.